Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
But you also had people that were very fine people.
Very fine people.
On both sides.
And the aliens would mind meld and give them the technology. They're bad aliens. So are you surprised the Nazis were influenced by demons?
No, if demons are real, I would definitely think they'd be on the side of the Nazis.
Yeah.
McDonald's is connected to the Clintons. They chop up the bodies and put them into the sausage and hamburgers. People are being cannibalized. Look it up.
And I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful, you know?
It's Pepe's become kind of a symbol.
Welcome to Yeah Nah Passaran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
I'm Andy Fleming.
And this week we are joined by Dr. Joan Braun, who is the co-editor of the new book On Christian Nationalism, Critical and Theological Perspectives. Thanks for joining us, Joan.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be back.
I guess just to begin with, could you tell us a little bit about maybe the gap that you were trying to fill with this book?
Yeah, this is a fairly academic book, although we hope it will be useful to people in other fields as well who maybe are activists, journalists, pastors, other folks. The way this kind of came about was I got invited to co-edit by David Guides, who is a theologian in Montana. And so I'm speaking for myself here, but I would say I think David and I share a concern about the way Christian nationalism has been defined in so many conflicting ways. And we wanted to bring some clarity to what's happening and to what this concept means. And I think for me, what I see when I look at the literature on this, there's been a huge outpouring of literature on Christian nationalism in the United States since the January 6th coup attempt. And because there was so much involvement of Christian pastors, charismatic evangelical churches, because there was so much Christian symbolism at the Capitol riot in 2021, it really gave rise to this huge new literature. And there had been people working on this concept before, of course, but it was like a huge rise in this literature in the US on what is Christian nationalism. And the literature is often defining Christian nationalism on the part of academics and critics. And unlike fascism, where you have fascists who identify as fascists quite openly, oftentimes, it's been less frequent that Christian nationalists have called themselves Christian nationalists. And there's been a huge increase in them using that terminology, but in response to activists, critics, journalists, academics who have put out this concern. So that's not to say there haven't been Christian nationalists this whole time, but it's difficult to define what this thing is, considering the fact that people have often not called themselves that. So what we tried to do was get a lot of angles on this question from a lot of different disciplines. So we had people looking at specific phenomena, specific churches, including both Protestant and Catholic versions of Christian nationalism. There's also material in the book on international comparisons, looking at Brazil, South Africa, Russia. And there's also people in the book trying to focus in on intersections of Christian nationalism with other oppressions and other frameworks. So there's a piece by Shane Burley on anti-Semitism. Mubashra Tazamal has a great piece on Islamophobia. A number of pieces address sexism and misogyny and gender. So we were really just trying to figure out like how to get some more serious analysis of what this thing is. And then we also had some theologians, probably not as many as David had hoped for with the initial plan, because I know David is passionate about trying to figure out what's the problem theologically with Christian nationalism, but we do have some people addressing that in the book. In particular, I think the last essay by Drew Strait gives people some practical tools as well to take from that in terms of counter-organizing. That's basically what I think, what I see the scope as being.
Joan, you've referred to the fact that the term has been relatively recently coined or applied to a range of different political phenomena. What do you think is significant about the fact that particular political actors may or may not want to self-identify as Christian nationalist?
I think it plays a number of different functions. Some people have other political agendas that are more primary. For example, there's anti-Semitism or Islamophobia or anti-trans politics. Sometimes those things are more primary. And also sometimes people are not, it's a span of religious sincerity, I think, because you've got people in these movements who are there because they are fanatical fundamentalists, and it's their interpretation of their faith that everyone should be forced to abide by these Christian standards. So the state should enforce Christianity, if not forcing people to convert, maybe forcing non-Christians to conform to their particular understanding of what a Christian morality is, perhaps expelling or preventing non-Christians from entering the country in more extreme cases, controlling access to political office for non-Christians. And then you have people who it's not really about the theology for them, and they're getting put under the same umbrella. So for some people, Christianity is more like an identity, right? It's sometimes it's a way of expressing a white nationalism. Sometimes it's Western civilization, which has like heavy overlap with white nationalism. It's cultural for some people. And some people are just simply LARPing neo-Nazis who are trying on the traditional dress of quote unquote traditional religion like Catholicism or Orthodoxy in order to recruit. So it's such a wide span of people. But the concerns that I have, of course, are about the ways that these movements do harm, propagate oppression, promote violence against marginalized groups. So when you look at sociologists like Perry and Whitehead and their book, Taking America Back for God, for example, is one of the most cited books in the literature on Christian nationalism. They're doing quantitative studies of like, how did people answer particular survey questions, which is interesting material, but it doesn't necessarily get us to underlying that. What are people's commitments and what kinds of movements are they part of, right? So we get this picture of there are so many people that think this thing, but there are deeper underlying questions to get to. And I think also the survey approach can get us very focused on surface level, and we start missing the ways people are drawn into this and what their broader perspective in politics is. And it can also create like too big a bucket, right? So if we look at who agrees to statements about America being a Christian nation, for example, some people are going to agree to those kinds of things for reasons that are not captured by the survey. And then also there are people who have a much more like simplistic or cliche understanding of that. And it manifests more and they want to sing patriotic songs in church, or they want to pray in front of a flagpole, or they want the city council meeting to start with a prayer. And all of that stuff I think is gross and not great. Like, I do think there should be separation between church and state to some extent for the sake of both things. But also if we talk about this in such a way that we can't distinguish someone like Matt Shea, who's organizing a Christian nationalist movement, from someone like just a grandmother who likes to sing America the Beautiful in church on Sundays, but doesn't really have a politics around that, then we're not being clear about the thing we're trying to analyze in a way that's helpful.
Someone who might want to do a little bit more than singing in church on Sunday is Nick Fuentes. You have a chapter in the book looking at the perhaps underexamined phenomenon of traditional Catholicism within the Christian nationalist milieu. Could you tell us a little bit about the role that Catholicism plays for some of these groups and I guess how it gets along with all the other flavors of Christianity?
Yeah, and this is a really interesting phenomenon because when people talk about Christian nationalism in the United States, there's often an assumption that we're talking about Protestants. And specifically, the assumption tends to be that we are talking about like a certain kind of evangelical Protestant. But there's been this huge rise in far-right Catholic mobilization. It's always been there, but it's very activated right now. and it's very memeified, and you've got people on the alt-right joining Catholicism to be part of this. It's very like in your face and aggressive. And it's complicated because in American society, and this is like still historically a Protestant country, and Catholics historically in the United States have faced various forms of exclusion. They were primarily immigrants over time. And even though at the same time, we would acknowledge that the Catholic Church has been part of various forms of oppression and colonization in the Americas. But it's also, it's weird to find sort of Catholicism being this kind of confidently triumphal about America. There is some weird tension there. And the alliance that they're forming with evangelical Protestants is complicated. Because Catholics, for example, can't honestly say that America was founded according to their theology. Protestants can't really do that either, but they have a stronger case. So there's a weird tension there. And then you have people like Fuentes. I don't know to what degree, and to some degree, I don't care beyond the political implications or the strategic implications. I don't care what's in people's hearts or whatever, right? It's hard to see Nick Fuentes as a pious figure, right? There's just this kind of brazen explosion of hate. But this is his brand, and his group has popularized this chant, Christ is King, which they've crafted into an anti-Semitic slogan. And they've really successfully, sadly, normalized to such an extent that they occupy a wing of the Republican Party. So Fuentes's movement, the America Firsters, the Groypers, post-Charlottesville, after the Charlottesville riot in 2017, where Heather Heyer was killed and a bunch of people were assaulted at that racist march, there was a split after Charlottesville, as some of your listeners know, where you had some members of the white nationalist movement who became more hardcore accelerationist, quote unquote, violent actors who wanted to go plan mass shootings and shut down city water supplies or those kinds of actions. But then you had people like Fuentes who wanted to focus on infiltration, normalization, entryism into mainstream political and cultural and social institutions to clean up, look normal, and gain more power. And he's met with Trump by now. He was on Tucker Carlson's show a few weeks ago. And the appearance on Tucker Carlson has really been an interesting watershed moment to see who in the Republican Party is willing to sign off on that and who is not. Because oftentimes outright anti-Semitism of Fuentes's variety of the Holocaust denying openly anti-Semitic conspiracy theory type of anti-Semitism has tended to be like the bridge too far for a lot of far Republicans in the United States. That's often been the line between like alt-right and alt-light, or between the people in Trump's base who are going to go online and meme him into power with neo-Nazi propaganda, as opposed to like Trump himself and the leadership of the Republican Party. But that line, it seems to be fading. And dressing up as Catholic, whether that's sincere or not, but the symbolism, the use of that, I think has to be addressed, because it's one of the ways that the Groypers and these kinds of movements are able to move the line. They're able to look at the public and say, like, J.D. Vance isn't criticizing us. Like, he's fine with us being on Tucker Carlson. He's a Catholic. And so you've got this kind of new wave of Catholics who are in the alt-right or in these Silicon Valley tech world ideologies. And it's a new thing. These are not just the people who are coming out of the tradition since the 1950s of going to Latin Mass. It's a shift. There's something new happening that really needs to be addressed.
What I'm hearing is they solved sectarianism and you want to tear it all down.
At least I say the line is moving, but I do enjoy the fact that it is so factionalized and it is so messy. Like it makes the left look like we get along so well when you look at some of the stuff happening on the right. So I think they're still fighting this out. But what worries me the most is, I don't know about the most, but what worries me about this is that we're seeing that this is just a faction on the right, right? Like the Overton window has moved to such a degree that Fuentes and his faction are part of what it means, are part of what it means to be Republican in the United States. And I hate to say that, but I think it's just the reality that we have to deal with now.
Joan, outside of Fuentes, I'm wondering what kind of influence Christian nationalists have upon Trump and how he's, what status he has within their worldview.
Yeah, it really depends. Because you've got people who see Trump as some sort of messiah figure, who read the Bible for looking for references to him. I saw a truck the other day in Spokane Valley with a sticker on the side of it that was supporting Trump. And it was quoting like Chronicles. It's like, find out why Trump is the right president. Book of Chronicles. I don't think Trump is in there. So you do have those people. And then you have people that I think they have a longer plan. They're building a program. To some degree, I think like Trump seems to be deteriorating. And I don't know what the future looks like in terms of how much he's going to be running the show. I'm more scared of J.D. Vance because Vance is an ideologue. Like Trump is an egomaniac, but Vance is like ideologically fascist. So I think there are people who are looking at Trump and they're seeing potential to have someone who fosters their ideology and power. But I think focusing so much on him that we think about him as like the leader of the movement or something would be going too far.
One of the reasons I ask is because in parts of the book, there's discussion about theology and I guess idolatry and the extent to which there may be some tension between Christianity and Catholicism and elevating the status of someone like Trump to becoming some sort of false idol. I'm wondering if you could speak to how Christian theologians in the book and elsewhere have responded to the challenges presented by Christian nationalism.
Yeah, idolatry is a common concern that comes up both in terms of Trump and in terms of the nation. One of our contributors, Drew Strait, is a Mennonite pastor. And the Mennonites have a very interesting tradition around church and state. They tend to see the state as very threatening to faith, and specifically around this question of idolatry. So they don't serve in the military, typically. They don't want flags in their churches. So those kinds of traditions. My co-editor, David, is a Bonhoeffer scholar. And so there's people looking at Bonhoeffer. And that's also a huge weird fight, because you would think that Bonhoeffer, as a theologian who volunteered to kill Hitler, would be mainly an anti-fascist hero among theologians, but there's also a faction of the right that's trying to claim Bonhoeffer as their guy. David could tell you more about all of that, but there's a film that came out recently, very right-wing film about Bonhoeffer. But anyway, there's numerous theological angles you can take, and it's tricky because, again, like which theology are we countering? Is it Catholic Christian nationalism? And what kind of Catholic Christian nationalism? Is it like this kind of cultural fascist Catholic Christian nationalism, or is it like hardcore Thomist theology that we're countering? Is it, and there's like anti-fascist Thomism, which you can do better. You've got people reading like medieval texts, and then you've got people that are just like memeing. Or is it, are we talking about the Bible? And so a lot of people are doing this kind of countering using the Bible with evangelical Christian spaces. And then there's other stuff, too. There's stuff going on in the Eastern Orthodox Church. There's Latter-day Saint nationalists. There's all different kinds of stuff. So, like, how do you counter it? And there are people doing interesting work around that. And I think it's tricky to know, like, where to go with that. Do you want to do – I think there's some potential for prevention of recruitment into these kinds of things – if pastors in moderate churches, so to speak, or really any churches, from like somewhat conservative to very progressive, because you find everyone in any kind of church is somehow represented. If pastors have a certain skill set around finding some of the limitations of this and educating people about it, that might help. I personally am somewhat skeptical that's going to be how to address it. Like, I think we're in such a dire moment there needs to be a mass movement against fascism in this country. We've got people literally being disappeared. And we have a president who's openly placed himself outside of any checks and balances, above the rule of law, above courts. So I think that personally, the sort of slow theological argument with people is not the direction that I want to go. I want to do mass movement building with people who are somewhat favorable already to anti-fascist movements, but just not engaged yet. And I'm also not a theologian, right? So maybe I'm punting on the question a little bit, but I also think it's not the most important focus. But it's good that people are doing it, and I want to support it. And I'm talking to some people who are working on creating a document for churches that could help pastors think about how to do some work countering this. So there is good work to be done there. Yeah, I don't personally have a real theological answer to this. Yeah, because I'm taking more of a social movement approach. From an outsider perspective, though, it certainly looks like bad theology. As a philosopher, I'm not impressed by the Christian nationalist arguments that I'm reading. I can say that.
It's one of those things where you can pick and choose what you like to support where you want to end up, right? With some of these groups, you might be on a bit of a hiding to nothing, pointing out that there was a bit of a love thy neighbor stuff somewhere towards the back of the book.
Yeah. there are some really basic values and social justice commitments that are hard to get around. And one of the things I've heard as well is that pastors who have just preached the same kind of sermon for 10, 20 years are now finding that when they say things, even sometimes quoted the literal words of Jesus about loving your enemies or very basic kinds of moral commitments, that people are coming up to them after church in the parking lot or whatever and saying, well, you got to stop doing this critical race theory or whatever. And the pastor's like, what are you talking about? Like, this is just, that's what Jesus said in the book. And that's what I've been saying for 20 years. So there's a tension there for sure. And one of the things I think about a lot is that there was a line from Peter Thiel about Christianity being weakness. So Peter Thiel is some form of Catholic and has been promoting his views as a theology, recently gave a series of talks on the Antichrist. But that's a very like Nietzschean kind of criticism and concern about Christianity, that Christianity sides with the weak, makes people weak. You would find like Ayn Rand, for example, saying that. And to me, and I come from an interfaith background, but to me, that's always one of the things that's attractive about Christianity. And it's one of the things that undergirds liberation theology is that sort of solidarity, right? Like that God is on the side of those suffering and oppressed and poor and excluded and so forth. And that's really hard to get around. That does seem to be a core thread that runs through Christianity and Christian scripture. But you're right. Like, you can find anything you want to find. My dissertation advisor had a line. He used to say, every religion contains seeds of oppression and seeds of liberation. And you make choices about what you want to water, what you want to bring forward from the tradition. Because you can find oppressive or liberatory interpretations, depending on what you're looking for.
Joan, speaking of choices, Christian nationalism, I'm thinking not only of Fuentes and the Groypers, but others, has also been implicated in the propagation of anti-Semitic and Islamophobic beliefs. Can you talk a little more about the worrying political content of Christian nationalism in this context?
Yeah, I think we're seeing the use of Christianity as a symbol of opposition in a lot of cases to Judaism and or Islam. And we see it, for example, in a lot of the Crusader imagery that's becoming very popular right now, and the use of kind of shouting Christian symbols at people. So people showing up and essentially shouting the rosary at protests or shouting Bible verses or lifting crosses. And I've been thinking a lot about the Groypers and the chant Christ is King, because that's clearly become an anti-Semitic dog whistle, which is complicated because Christians tend to believe that Christ is king in some sense, not a worldly king usually, but has some sort of royal authority over creation. But that chant got picked up by more people. It became an anti-Semitic slogan. And I'm trying to figure out the history of that too, because there's a number of different things that it could come out of. There was a reactionary movement in the 20s in Mexico called the Cristeros, who led a revolt against the Mexican Revolution because they were objecting to the restrictions placed on the Catholic Church, which were quite extreme at the time. And their chant was Viva Cristo Rey, Long Live Christ the King. And that chant has been around churches for a while, Catholic churches. And not most people that chant that are not like aware that they're like evoking this particular movement or how complex that movement was politically. But I think I have a theory that maybe that's part of where this is coming from, that maybe there's this right-wing Catholic circle that would really know that history and the history of the declaration of the Feast of Christ the King, which was in the 20s, shortly before the Cristero Revolt, where Pope Pius XI decreed a certain Sunday as Christ is King Sunday. And we've seen actually two different states in the past year, I think it was Oklahoma and Michigan, their state House of Representatives passed declarations of Christ being King just in 2025. One of them declaring specifically like the Feast of Christ the King as Christ is King Sunday. So I think there's use of the state to really push this. And again, that line between church and state and between the more overt like Groiper tendencies and what used to be mainstream Republicanism, those lines are really porous. So even like the tweets of the Department of Homeland Security, for example, include Bible quotes and references to remigration. So it's taking on this more overtly like anti-non-Christian, anti-non-white meaning and messaging. And that's becoming, it's coming now from the executive level.
Joan, one far-right Catholic faction that you examine in the book is the Dimes Square clique, who I felt like I was hearing a lot about all against my will for a while. But I must admit, I haven't kept up to date on what's going on in Dimes Square. Could you just explain to our listeners what is Dimes Square and where it's at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's pretty close to dead. And it was really pretty heavily, like the term sometimes you'll hear about left groups that are a little bit fake, like that are funded by like fake environmentalist groups that are fake left groups. People say it's AstroTurf, like fake grass. And it feels very AstroTurf to me. There clearly were a circle of people who thought under the height of the pandemic in a certain neighborhood in New York, really thought they were part of some sort of bohemian cultural moment, reclaiming fascism and making it cool. And there were artists in that circle, theater people, writers, podcasters, and just like Republican political operatives and Nazis. And it was a weird moment. It was made into a much bigger thing in the media than it really was. What I was really commenting on in the chapter, I think, was I was concerned about the way this was painted as like a reclaiming of Catholicism. Because when you look at what was happening there, it seemed like a lot of kind of LARPing, right? A lot of kind of playing with Catholic imagery, playing Catholic dress up. But people are naive about that kind of thing. And it allows fascist and fascist adjacent movements to spread when these things are reported as, oh, the kids are becoming Catholic and that Catholicism is cool, and not looking at the political context. So there was a lot of talk about who's funding this. Is Peter Thiel funding it? This kind of thing. There was clearly money there. I don't know. They might still have like one club that they founded, like one building. But beyond that, it doesn't seem like there's much happening. The Red Scare podcast, which is a weird fascist podcast, which tried to present itself as left for a while, but clearly was not, was also in that space of Dimes Square. I know they're still around, unfortunately, podcasting, but it does seem to me like it's died down. And if people know things that are still happening that they want to share, I'd be interested. But I think it's gone is my take.
Oh, rest in peace.
Yeah. Or not, yeah.
Joan, Christian nationalism is present in the US body politic, but there are other manifestations elsewhere in the world, in places like Russia and Brazil and so on. What can you say about Christian nationalism as a, I guess, a transnational movement or network? What's the relationship between expressions of Christian nationalism in the United States and elsewhere in the world?
People have models they can look to across national lines, and people network across these national lines. And that's also something that I think gets overlooked way too much in the mass publication of literature about Christian nationalism in America. So much so, in fact, that a lot of the literature that I read about Christian nationalism just starts with a definition that Christian nationalism is the belief that America was founded as a Christian nation, which assumes, right, that it's only a thing that happens in the United States. It takes different forms, different places. I had some caution in response to Dustin Bird's article. We went back and forth a few times with edits, because I think there are people that put too much emphasis on Putin pulling the strings behind the scenes of the Trump administration or inspiring American Christian nationalists. I think there's a little bit of that going on, and I think we landed on a place where we were both happy with the article and how it was framed. But I did have some caution around that. But yeah, whether we're talking about charismatic, evangelical, non-denominational movements, which played a big role in the Capitol riot, or that we're talking about the Catholic far right or Orthodoxy, there's major international connections. Catholic movements, you've got like monarchist groups going way back. You've got all different kinds of things across national lines. The charismatic evangelical space, the more Christian nationalist parts of that movement are very international and also multiracial. And I think that's important to notice, because we often talk about Christian nationalism as white Christian nationalism. And there's definitely like whiteness as a construct and understanding, like deeply impacting Christian nationalism, but that doesn't mean Christian nationalists are white necessarily. So you definitely find these movements active with connections in Latin America, Africa, Asia, etc. And some of the leaders in the United States have also been people of color in Christian nationalist, evangelical, charismatic spaces.
Joan, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks so much for coming on. If people want to find your work, you do have a website, joanbraun.com, and the book is called On Christian Nationalism, Critical and Theological Perspectives. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much.
Andy, that is our program. We will be back next week. See you then.
See you then.
In the UK, racists are torching buildings that house refugees. In the US, ICE-style militias disappear people from their homes and schools. The far right here looks at that and wants an Australian version of it. They're organising openly on the streets of Melbourne and are trying to grow, and that's why we have to organise too. Join the campaign against racism and fascism on Sunday, the 30th of November, meeting at the State Library at 11:30 a.m. to stand with migrants and push back far-right politics. Because the far right can be stopped, but only when ordinary people refuse to let them grow. Visit cough.melbourne to learn more about the campaign and to get involved.
A 3CR supporter.
Help 3CR raise funds by donating your containers. Every eligible drink container that you return to a Container Deposit Scheme recycling point earns 10 cents, which can really add up. 3CR is a donation partner for Victoria's Container Deposit Scheme. The scheme allows you to recycle selected aluminium, glass or plastic containers and donate the funds earned to a not-for-profit organisation of your choice. Help us raise funds for the station. Search for Community Radio and choose 3CR next time you cash in your cans. Go to cdsvic.org.au for more information.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.